I'm in the bow and I'll tell you what I wanna do. If I ever had my way, I just wanna ride the chair with you. Because I'm getting air, getting air, getting air. I feel it everywhere, 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 everywhere. Getting air, I'm getting air.
Hello and welcome to Getting Air. My name is Terry Green, and this is the Open Pedagogy Podcast / radio show on Voice Ed Radio. We use this space to get some airtime for those working in open and technology-enabled learning. Today, we have from the Digital Technologies Research Center at the National Research Council of Canada, specializing in new instructional media and personal learning technology, a true one-of-a-kind in the EdTech world. We have Stephen Downs. Welcome.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Let's see. I'm just a shade under 6 feet tall. I have blue eyes. No. As you said, I work with the National Research Council in Canada. I'm based in Ottawa. I live in a small town in the country called Castleman, which is where I like to be. And basically, my job is to keep up to date and maybe push the frontier a little in the field of education technology, distance learning, new instructional media, new media generally, and related areas. I sometimes talk as though, where I work is at the intersection of education, philosophy, computers, and media. And that seems to peg my work about right.
Fantastic. So just have to help push a field forward. That sounds exhausting.
Well, it can be, especially when it fights very hard not to be pushed forward, I guess.
So the last person I interviewed for this podcast was Jim Groom.
Oh, yeah.
And I finished off by asking him, telling him that you would be the next person I interviewed, and just asked him basically, what would you ask him? And he said, you need to listen to what he said when it's released, or it will be when this comes out. He said he was, you were one of the people that were very supportive of him when he was when he came out with his EduPunk stuff. He was getting a lot of shit for that, and that you were a big supporter. He says he remembers back in 2004 someone telling him he gotta check out this site, and that site beat was downs.ca. He said getting downs is no small thing. You have an uncannily powerful ability to see through all the BS and pay attention to the right things, to know where we're going, to be a barometer, and that you've been providing this service for longer and better than just about anybody. So his question is, like, your most recent article is just as fresh as anything you've ever done. How do you stay so fresh?
Work.
Yeah.
Without false modesty, I guess, I put in the work.
Right.
As you know, and your listeners may know, I do a daily newsletter.
Yeah.
6 to 8 articles every day on the field of education technology. That, at a minimum, keeps me up to date.
Right.
Because you can't do that without staying up to date. Well, I mean, I suppose you could. I mean, there are newsletters out there that are, they're just literally just phoned in, right? Copy paste. But
yeah.
I make sure to read the stuff that I post,
mm-hmm.
and to try to have an intelligent and informed comment on what I post, and I think people appreciate that.
Yes.
And I know it makes it harder, but that's how I stay up to date. And then the stuff I do in between. I'm into this stuff, and that kind of helps too.
Yeah, that must help. Yeah, I was downsed once with a project I worked on called the Open Faculty Patchbook, and you write a couple paragraphs maybe, but what mm-hmm. you wrote proved you went through the entire thing, the book, the whole thing. So that's very impressive. Can you tell us a little bit about how you find things and how something makes the cut for being one of those 6 to 8 things in the OL Daily?
Well, I've had a set of principles for OL Daily that I've followed since the start. You can actually find them if you look at the newsletter. There's an About OL Daily page,
right,
that tells you what I'm looking for. And I'm looking for new stuff, but, you know, not just the churn of everyday events, not hirings and firings, acquisitions and stocks and things like that, because that's churn. That's just noise. I know the financial people are very invested in it, literally. Mm-hmm. But that's not indicative of where technology is headed. We know that they can be very wrong. And then I cast a very wide net. Mm-hmm. I mentioned, you know, the four disciplines. I actually look into stuff in all four disciplines, not just the crossover. So I, right, have a bit of an informed view each time I look at a crossover. I use RSS a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I subscribe to, I don't know, 600 or 700 feeds, give or take. You know, it's an ongoing process of adding new feeds and culling the dead ones. And I subscribe to newsletters. I'm on various mailing lists, discussion boards, mostly just lurking, but, you know, sometimes I contribute some snark. Twitter, you know, I don't follow people on Twitter, but I'm always watching Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, do relatively routine Twitter searches. Mastodon is something new. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn, I do have a bunch of people I follow on LinkedIn, although that's turning into more and more commercialism and useless stuff. You know, and then finally, it's, you know, I look at something and I say, is this new to me?
Yeah.
And, you know, I have, you know, enough of a background in the field that if it's new to me, it's probably new to pretty much everyone reading the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone. You know, there's, I like to say, for everything I say, write, or do, there's somebody else out there who knows more about it than I do, did it before I did, and probably better. But for the rest, you know, the rest of the people,
yeah,
it's useful.
Yeah.
So that's basically the principle.
That sounds, yeah, that's amazing. What, on top of your head, how many OL dailies have there been?
Okay, so I started doing the RSS version in 1998, mm-hmm, but the email newsletter doesn't start until May the 1st. I did a few pilot runs, mm-hmm, but May the 1st of 2001. So that gives us, let me see, 2001 to 2019, 18 years, plus 3 months. So 200 days a year, so it's 200 times 18, what's 2 times 18? 36. So 3,600, that'd be, is that 3,600?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, plus 3 months worth, so give it, 20 days a month, maybe a bit more. So let's say 60, so 3,660, probably 3,672,
and then,
would be a good estimate.
And then if I times that by 6 things each time, you got 22,000? 22,000, almost.
Yeah, I don't usually, this number, the actual number of posts is closer to 31,000.
Wow.
Now, that 31,000 includes a couple of thousand articles that aren't posts, but actually full-fledged articles. And, you know, I sometimes go over the 6 to 8.
Right. I think that is a good example of being prolific. Amazing. Can I ask a little bit about your hardware setup for how you do your reading and sharing?
Yeah, sure.
What do you got?
So I'm actually a Windows person, believe it or not. I've spent my time in the other worlds. When everybody had the MacBook Pros, I had the MacBook Pro. I don't use any Apple technology anymore because I don't like closed marketplaces, and that's a closed marketplace.
Yeah.
I use Linux a fair bit on the server side. My web server, of course, is on Linux and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the desktop side, I use Windows just because it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
That matters a lot to me. Browser, I use Firefox. I use Chrome to read. I have my main email address, and then I have a newsletter subscriptions email address.
Mm-hmm.
So I just read my main. I use Gmail for my email. I used to run my own email server,
mm-hmm.
After 18 years or so, I finally got clobbered by the anti-spam services. Not by spam, but by the anti-spam services, who basically they're locking down that world, and if you're not tied to one of the large commercial email services, you're probably a spammer, or at least that's what they decide.
I see.
So, and you can't prove it to them otherwise.
Yeah.
Because they don't work that way. They don't, it's just there's too many people out there for them to actually take individual proofs that, no, I'm not running a spam service. So they just say, if you're running your own mail server, you must be a spammer. So I switched to Google Mail. And for the newsletter, I use MailChimp to send it out.
Okay.
Not thrilled. When I moved over, actually, I lost 3/4 or more of my email subscriptions. So it's quite low now. It's only about 500 email subscriptions now.
Oh wow!
Which is affordable.
Yeah.
And I'm not really pushing it because, if I had 2,000 email subscriptions. Actually, I was up to about 4,000 email subscriptions, so it's more than that. Anyhow, that'd be pretty expensive. So I don't really push my email newsletter now because it's expensive to send it out.
Yeah.
But I have RSS subscribers, who knows how many. And I also push the newsletter to Twitter. And for the newsletter itself, there's, 5,000 or 6,000 Twitter followers. For the, again, I have a newsletter, Twitter account, and a personal Twitter account.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine you sitting at a desk with 12 screens. How many screens are you staring at?
Three.
Three. That sounds about right.
Well, not counting the phone. Not counting a laptop, which is closed, and my other laptop's in the shop, but I'm getting it back. After this. But yeah, generally I'm running 3 monitors.
Awesome. That's
at home I run 2 monitors.
Right. So you are at an office now?
I'm at an office. I'm at my office at the National Research Council.
Cool.
It's not as comfortable as working at home. The bandwidth isn't as good, but they like it when they show up.
Oh, they.
Yeah.
It sounds like an amazing setup. Now I want to ask you a little bit of advice. I've just been able to ask to join the Horizon Report expert panel, where we're looking for trends and signals in where technology is going in education. So if you what advice would you have for me for how to do the best I can in this job?
So they're using, I recently confirmed, still using a Delphi methodology.
That's right.
Which basically they collect a group of experts together, ask them a bunch of questions, and basically push those experts toward a consensus through an iterative process.
Uh-huh.
And the problem with that methodology is, from my perspective, is that it pushes out the unique contributions, it pushes out the outliers,
mm-hmm.
and pushes everybody toward the lowest common denominator mean.
Right.
And in the case of the Horizon Report, as I've told them in the past, what it means is that they predict events that have already happened. Because those are the safest predictions, right?
Yesterday's weather,
right? Or they look out the window and say, oh yeah, today it's going to be sunny. And I predict that for the next hour, it'll still be sunny, except unless there's a cloud. Yeah, it's you know, the old saying we have, you know, nice day if it don't rain.
Exactly.
So the advice I have is to push against this.
Okay.
Although, you know, the Delphi methodology makes it very hard because you're not really in control of the output, right? Mm-hmm. The process is in control of the output. You know, it's still, you know, you want to push toward the outlier case. You want to push toward the thing that actually hasn't happened yet, but that you think might,
mm-hmm.
and might actually be useful. And that's harder because you can't just look at your computer and say, oh yeah, well, here's an article on this and there's an article on that. You actually have to think of things that haven't happened yet.
Right.
So I don't know if you can push that through that methodology, but try.
So how do I find those outliers? I subscribe to OL Daily.
Well, again, though, right? You know, if you're seeing it on OL Daily, then to some sense, it's already happened.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Just recently happened. I mean, the question is, you know, what is the source of creativity, right? How do you come up with new ideas? Mm-hmm. And contrary to myth, new ideas don't spring out of your head fully formed. You know, like as they say, like Pallas from the head of Zeus. It's an old philosophy saying. And this is why I specialize in multiple disciplines.
Yeah.
You know, ideas in media often overlap into education. So something will happen in media long before it happens in education. I've got, you know, in the hopper for the newsletter, a Metafilter link right now, or no, a CJR link right now, talking about all the problems magazines are having.
Right.
And, you know, news media has been a leading indicator, education's a lagging indicator, but what happens in news media generally happens to education a few years later. So voila, instant prediction.
Yeah.
You know, patterns, things that happen, you know, things that happen in computer science end up happening in educational technology.
Right.
Easy prediction, right? The really interesting thing is when you can take a concept from one and a concept from another and combine them. I make it sound like, you know, it's like playing with blocks or whatever.
Yeah.
But it almost is. You know, people talk about how hard it is to predict the future. It is not hard to predict the future. It's hard to predict the future if you have no knowledge. If you're just trying to come up with something from scratch. But, you know, if you have good in analytical skills, which we could talk about, and good domain knowledge, mm-hmm. you can come up with a pretty reasonable sense of what's going to happen in the future. And then add to that the 50% fudge factor for things that, you know, as Rumsfeld said, the unknown unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things happen. And the other thing, too, is nothing we do happens in a vacuum. And educators often act, and not just educators, technologists generally often act as though their world is the whole world. Out there in the rest of the world, things happen. Like, for example, global warming is happening.
Yeah.
It's going to have an effect, right? Out there in the rest of the world, there are people like Donald Trump. Like it or not, you know, and that's not a tech story, that's not an education story, and for the most part, I ignore it because it's too annoying to follow. But you know, that's the sort of thing, you know, all of a sudden, for no particular reason, you might get a trade war, and so Huawei has to change its operating
right.
system. You know, So you need that 50% fudge factor. Yeah, but you know, besides that, I think it's relatively straightforward to predict.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. That's helpful. I will just... I find this task daunting, so I appreciate the help. That's great. I wanted to ask you a bit about your most, I think it's your most recent article about the future of OER. Is that your most recent?
Yeah. It's most recent publication. I have a few more articles in the pipeline. Works, yeah. Our management decided that they wanted us to do more publications, so I'm giving them more publications.
Well, this one is like amazing. I recommend anybody read it who is interested in OER. It's like mind bending almost. I think you've done articles like this before, right? One of your maybe more famous ones, The Future of Online Learning, from maybe, was that late 90s?
It was 1998.
Wow. Yeah. So that, do you think, does this piece kind of, is it like a spiritual descendant of that one at all? Or do you think? Or do you have others?
This one is more narrowly defined than Future of Online. The Future of Online Learning was, you know, a sweeping epic, if you will, covering a long-term future and covering a wide range of topics, because I looked at technology trends, I looked at education trends, some social trends, and put them all together. It's also nice that it turned out to be pretty much bang on accurate as well. I can say that 20 years later.
So it's unbelievable.
Hope I do that again. the future of OER is more focused on OER, and it's more focused on some short-term stuff that'll have longer-term implications.
Right.
And there's more ways it could go wrong. It's more specific in its predictions. And so it's more, I don't want to say it's an advocacy post, because it isn't that. I think this is where OERs are going to go, if not precisely how I describe it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are more things that could stop it from happening, you know, like for example, if it turns out to be impossible to have a distributed content addressable network, then this won't work.
Right.
And it's possible that this might be the case because of neo-fascists.
Oh, wow.
Well, because, you know, we've recently heard about 8chan, it's a practice of publishing, you know, offensive manifestos from mass shooters. 8chan's been taken off the internet, yay.
Yeah.
But there's a story, it's in my newsletter today, from Engadget about them trying to get it going again in something called ZeroNet, which is a blockchain-based, BitTorrent-based, Tor-based, distributed content platform, and which provides total anonymity,
etc. Right, right.
So now you've got these things on that. Now, is that enough to derail the entire project, or can we manage to do this project in such a way as to not enable neo-fascists? That's one of these questions that's really hard to answer. I think we can. I think it's possible. And the way you do it is you don't visit neo-fascist websites, and then you're not distributing them. But, you know, there's a certain crowd out there that likes this. So.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you're... ability to draw on different domains is pretty impressive. Do you think that you mentioned in the article a couple times about diminishing need for then licensing? Do you think like an organization like Creative Commons is ready for that, to roll with that, or are they still necessary?
Well, I mean, Creative Commons is an interesting creature. Yeah. As everyone knows, it was founded by Lawrence Lessig. And it brings into being, I don't want to say, a neo-capitalist perspective, although it does that. What it does do is entrench the whole idea of content, any content, as property, as owned property that is therefore licensed. Yeah. And it does so in a viral way, in the sense that the only way to license something as open access is basically to put an advertisement for Creative Commons on your content.
Yeah.
So, pretty clever, but not necessarily for the right reasons. But the principle of, what I'll call open content, and we can talk about the definition of that, or free content, we can talk about the definition. That principle is good. To a certain degree, to a significant degree. But the other side of it is a license isn't an enforcement mechanism. And nowhere do we see that more clearly than in the case of the Creative Commons BY license, CC BY, where commercial publishers, for example, take CC BY content, wrap it in their own stuff, and then sell it. And they can do that, and they can do it in such a way as to make it basically impossible to get the free version of something. You can only get the commercial version of something, which was totally contrary to the whole point in the first place, right? But if you like a commercial capitalist system, this is what you expect to happen and what you want to happen. But it's not what a lot of people want to happen. So how do you fix that? The way you fix that is you organize your content such that once your content is released, it cannot be enclosed. And that's where the distributed networks come in. There's two aspects to that. First of all, the content is, as they say, content addressable. You define access to a piece of content based on the content itself. And the way you do that is you make a hash of the content. That hash then becomes the address of the content. And so if you're looking for a certain piece of content, you're looking for that hash. And that means now that your content can be anywhere. It doesn't have to be just on one server. It's in fact distributed. So you just ask the network as a whole, does anyone have this hash? And the nearest person to you who has it sends you a copy. So now content becomes impossible to enclose. Right. But, and so you can't just take this content, wrap your stuff around it, prevent anyone from accessing it. So why do you need the license anymore, right? If you put the content into the system, right, and if you say digitally sign it so that you're clearly giving permission for it to be in the system, then you don't need a license. It's in the system. This is how the system works. So I think that that's a better approach. Now, is what I've described without issues? Well, no, it's not without issues. There's the zero net problem I just referred to earlier. There's content versioning issues. So I'm studying GitHub closely. There are some, access speed issues, etc. And also just ease of use. It's hard right now to use a system like this. But 20 years from now, if we think in that kind of time frame, the idea of licensing the content might be silly, might be deemed to be silly. It might have been, it was a stopgap that worked for a while, but really, it wasn't a license that you needed. It was, a coding protocol.
That makes sense. So interesting. We're already pushing up against our 30-minute time frame, so can I ask you just a couple more questions?
Sure.
Do you have any plans to revive the Eagle Report?
No. OL Daily is my current Eagle Report. Right. How about that?
That sounds good. Did you, that was, you mentioned in a, like, Hi, This Is Me video on your YouTube about that. You started it in grade five, is that right? A newspaper?
Yeah. It was, I printed it out on a mimeograph machine. I sold copies for 5 cents each. I didn't sell very many copies. It was all handwritten. The illustrations were hand-drawn. And the big story that I covered was when the arena burned down. I drew a picture of the arena burning down.
And sorry, where was that?
That was in Metcalf. Metcalf, Ontario. It's just south of Ottawa.
Okay.
Down the road from Castleman.
Gotcha. Amazing. One more quick question. I like sci-fi, but I haven't read a whole lot. Give me a recommendation for favorite sci-fi.
Well, I like Bruce Sterling a lot. That's probably the first one I'd go with.
Bruce Stern?
Sterling. Sterling.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm on it. That's great. I could ask you a million more questions, but I don't want to take up more of your time. I appreciate it so much. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
That's great. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks.